I've talked about the Sinaitic Codex, the gift to the church, one of the 50 gifts from Constantine to the church. They're all a little different, the ones that are preserved. This one is quite different in some of its readings. And I think the differences are important. You know, there have been a spectrum of highly consecrated, motivated brethren looking into this subject. And there's been a spectrum of beliefs from that. So we have to always keep in mind that we look through a glass darkly. We see in part. And this is an attempt to jump into that fray. These are all acknowledged. You know, even if there's always something you can pick up from what the brethren have said in their studies, even if you're not completely in agreement with them. Right now, there's an ongoing study with the New Albany class that is revising their notes, that is what this is echoing. I won't say it's completely based on it, because I do depart at points from some of the conclusions in the study. But Sue and I attend, and so does Brother Joe Schell, and he keeps coming back to the point, well, how do these plagues affect Israel? And so I think that's important. Some of the issues that the New Albany class is touching on, we won't have time to get into today. And that includes things like saying each of the bowls that gets poured out by the angels should have a correspondence with the specific messengers to that stage of the church. And those are very, very interesting correlating lessons. We don't have time to get into them. But I want to look at two things and see if we can not only look at the seven last plagues, but harmonize this with, I'm going to flip here to, and now I guess I do really need to come down. There we go. This is something that we've talked about previously. And this is the relationship of the pictures we have in Revelation with what is a clearly taught type. Okay, there's three good people mentioned in Revelation and three bad people mentioned in Revelation that are historic. One of the bad people and the only woman is Jezebel. And of course, we do a lot to talk about the relationship between her husband Ahab and Jezebel. Just as a reminder, she is the daughter of King Ethbaal from Sidon. He's the king of Sidon and Tyre. She's a Gentile, and she intermarries with the house of Omri. And of course, we have every reason to believe that Ahab pictures the church-state union during the 1260 days. Picture in Elijah's declaring the drought during the gospel age. So Jezebel's a clearly taught type. And I think when you look at what happens after her husband Ahab is killed, not at Armageddon, not at Megiddo, but in Ramath Gilead fighting the Syrians, he's killed, and he's succeeded by first one and then a second son. So we're going to try to pull that together, and you'll be able to take a look at that as a on the hard copy if you're not online. So first we start with an interesting change right off the bat. If you read through, and I encourage everybody to open their texts, their Bibles to Revelation 16. Most of you will be either using King James or a more modern translation. Some of you might be using the RVIC. I don't see any copies right here, but that doesn't mean you're not opening them. And you'll notice an interesting difference right at the beginning. It says, It says, go your ways and pour out the vials. Well, that's not what the Sinaitic says. It uses the same verbs. And it's a subtlety in the Greek. All of a sudden, instead of this sounding like a command to the angels, the Sinaitic changes the verb tense and changes something we call the voice of the verb to mean take somebody to the judgment seat and pour on that somebody these plagues. So that's different right off the bat. Verse 1. Liddell Scott, which is one of the best lexicons for the Greek in English, makes the point that this is essentially saying bring somebody to arraignment before the judgment seat. That's the sense, very different than what we have preserved by the Alexandrian school of manuscripts. So to verse 2, the first went forth and poured the bowl into the earth, and corrupt and grievous sores came upon those men having the mark of the beast and the ones worshiping his image. I have to say that after hearing the consideration, and I do love the brethren on all sides of this question, but I do think the plagues began with the First World War, and they have been ongoing since then. I understand there's brethren that strongly believe you're not standing for the truth if you don't place them in the future, and I have to respectfully say, let's take a look at the evidence, brethren. It really appears as though what happened, the First World War began on the very prophetic date, and here are the handouts arriving. Andre, why don't you just assist Sue and thank you in passing those. So what happens? The church state systems are broken. Babylon and her daughters are totally defeated and changed. And so is the image. Now, what was the image? Well, we've tied that in with the world's most powerful empire going into the First World War. That would be Great Britain. And all of them were smitten and stricken by this war. It says it's an open sore. It's one you can see. It's like this is something you can't heal. And so I believe that going back to the fourth page of the handout, you will see that in this First World War, Ahab dies. This order dies, and when we get to the fourth plague, I'll show you that this is what everybody believed at the time, that Ahab died. The benefits to Israel were incredible, because the Ottoman control of the land that we call Israel today passed to Great Britain. And that's a whole interesting subject in its own right. And following the war, Great Britain issued the Balfour Declaration, which set forth the legal basis for the state of Israel. Well, what happened coming out of the war? The world didn't know where to go, but they knew they needed a new world order. That's an important historical point. The world did not know where to go. They still don't know where to go, but following the First World War, the church state systems were succeeded by a series of very ugly experiments in brutal dictatorship, claiming to be guided by the will of the people. In Russia, you had an overthrow, a brutal overthrow of the monarchy. And after Lenin died, you had Joseph Stalin taking over, introducing a very brutal regime to anybody who was an enemy of his vision for communism. Shortly after that, you had an economic crisis, a world depression, and this paved the way for the discontent that comes with the economic downturn, paved the way for Nazism in Germany and fascism in Italy. Now, let's just talk about fascism for a minute. Fascism wanted to move back to the order that the world had before it was a church state system. It was really endorsing like a vision of the Roman Empire before it came into Christianity. We're going to leave aside the concordant with the Vatican. Believe me, the Vatican was really kept right inside their little boundaries. He was interested in moving in that direction. But the Nazi regime said, we're looking for a new rule. German for that is Reich. This is going to not be the rule of the Roman Empire before it became Christian, which was the First Reich. It was not going to be the rule of the church state system that had just died in World War I, which was the Second Reich. This is the Third Reich. Did you want to know why it's called the Third Reich? That's why it's called the Third Reich. They were looking for a new world order. And if you look at your handout, what you find is there's this King Ahaziah of Israel, and he is a worshiper of Baal, like his mom, who's going to end up going out the window. He falls out a window. That's really curious. You know, this is an accident-prone family around windows. And so he falls out the window, which means you need to know what the symbolism of windows is. And I think in this case, when you looked, you had absolutely incredibly stupid things said, like the president of Columbia University said, you know, with as tough as these times are, these dictators that are rising in Europe are the right kind of men to keep our, to run, you know, to help organize us in these tough times. Okay. And that's a legitimate quote. I don't have his name right now, but I remember as the president of Columbia. Of course, there were people that were so afraid of communism that anything that wasn't communism looked good to them, like Joseph Kennedy, the daddy of John F. Kennedy and that family. This public presentation, I think, is what's pictured by falling out the window. And then he's lingering and dying. And what does he do? He goes and says, I want to send a delegation to the Philistines, to Baalzebub, to ask, you know, whether I'm going to recover. And Elijah is still alive. In this period, take a look on over here. Elijah is still alive. He says, you know, we'll save you the trip to Philistia. Tell your master he's going to die. So Elijah's still around for this short-lived order. Thank the Lord. Let's keep going. The third poured out his bowl upon the rivers and the fountains of waters, and they became blood. And I heard the angels of the waters. Now that's a difference from your manuscript. It's going to say singular angel. Now, why are we doing that? Well, let me just pull up the diaglot as it stands right now in preparation. And no, it will not be done for my birthday. But anyway, that was a nice thing to hope for. Here we go. We'll make that nice and big. And let's see, Okay, we're on verse 4. Yes, thank you. No, that's not what we want. 5. Yeah, there we go. All right, so what's the big deal? Well, this doesn't make sense. That's the big deal in the Greek. The word the is in the plural, and the word angel is in the singular. So something got transmitted wrong. Either it's plural angels or singular angel. Now, the Alexandrian family says singular angel, but this is talking about the waters. And if we go back to Revelation 9:14, we see the angels of the waters. I think these angels of the waters are, okay, we'll leave this for a minute here. These angels of the waters are talking about suppressed human rights, because that's coming to the fore before the mind of people. The cry for religious liberty, the cry along this line, focusing on this symbol of the angels of the waters. And they say that what has happened so far is righteous in the sight of the Lord. You know, in the 1930s, it's hard to believe every cherished belief in every line of inquiry was under attack. And, you know, rightly so. Because we'll look at things from the science side. One of the things that was totally under attack was people realized that the whole way they looked at the universe was wrong. There had been a guy named Albert Einstein who said, you know, Newtonian physics doesn't really explain everything. And I've got a better explanation that says you always had this problem. Well, I don't want to get into a big science thing, but anyway, you had the changes in physics. You had the changes in thinking in economics. You had the changes in social thinking that now could move forward. They weren't under the constraints that had been there prior to the First World War. And what does this affect? Well, it directly affects the fountains of waters. Yes, those are the systems with religious teachings, but these are also the systems with the secular teachings. All of this was under attack and changing in this period. And were they coming up with what was right in the sight of the Lord? Well, they were for physics. I'm supportive of Einstein physics. If you go to some of the crackpot groups, they insist on using the 1910 Encyclopedia Britannica because that's the year before it was discovered that, yeah, light actually does bend because of the gravitational influence of the sun. And by the way, this was such a problem. When you get to the Nazi period, they couldn't stand that this had come from a Jew. So they had a whole program to develop a classical physics text that was not at all believing in relativity. And it's one of those curious things out there. And that was in a country that had some of the absolute finest minds working on the problems of trying to understand quantum mechanics, like Heisenberg, for example. but anyway, everything was under attack and changing, and what was being fed to the sea, because when you take a look at Ecclesiastes 1:7, it says the rivers feed the sea, but you know, it's never full, it never overflows. It was not a life-giving program that was coming from this. And what came out of these fountains was undrinkable and dead to both spiritual life and the civil order. You might want to take a look at that reference to Revelation 8:10, to also which is the third angel. It's the third plague. The third angel pours out the third plague. That one hits the fountains of water also, but we won't keep expanding on that. So I did want to talk for a minute, though. I'd introduced the angels of the waters, and I just wanted to expand on that. Those are the four angels of Revelation 9:15. I'm going to read from the RVIC here. Loose the four angels which are bound in the great river Euphrates. And the four angels were loosed that had been prepared for the hour and day and month and year that they should kill the third part of men. I'm just quoting here directly from the draft notes, and these are the draft notes. The four pillars are angels of man's world, religious, economic, social, and political, were all bound in the same location with the people. Now, this is during that period prior to the Reformation. And of course, Brother Russell examines every one of those four aspects of civilization in the fourth volume. And if you haven't been through the fourth volume lately, go through the fourth volume. If you say, I can't do it without a study, join the, go through it. You really need to. and just as a reminder, it's very interesting that it appears as though there's a direct link to the Reformation. The first martyrs of the Reformation, two Dutch priests, friars that converted to the Lutheran doctrines, were burned at the stake on July 1st, 1523. And that is exactly 391 years and 1 month, which is what counting that out gives you and adding it up. That takes you exactly to August 1st, 1914. I don't think that's an accident. I think that's the way it gets fulfilled. There's some brethren who say, no, those are all separate. Oh, really? Well, tell me what they are. Well, we don't know, but they're separate pictures. Well, that doesn't hang together for me. I'm going to read here from why this is important. And this is a book by Brad Gregory called The Unintended Reformation. We know what Martin Luther intended, but this is the unintended Reformation, how a religious revolution secularized society. Well, that's an interesting thesis. And he's accurate, by the way. I think it's a good piece of work. And I'm quoting here, the Bible was God's word, his saving truth for human beings with implications for that life understood as a comprehensive whole, including politics and the right ordering of society. You know, we just talk about the development of our characters, saying we know that's going to get straightened out in the kingdom. But for the rest of the world, this really was their guide for how society was supposed to run. Preached to the lay people of widely varying social locations and educational backgrounds in the 1520s, the gospel ignited a firestorm of anti-clericism in the towns and villages of the Holy Roman Empire and Switzerland. Christian men and women were only too familiar with the shortcomings of their omnipresent church, whose clergy, they were now told, had twisted scripture and concealed God's truth from them. What was their reaction? No wonder privileged priests were so self-serving and sinful. Wow. Sparked, at least partly by these ideas, the German Peasants' War, and I've got a talk on that, but I haven't ever been able to present it here yet, was the largest series of popular uprisings in Western Europe before the French Revolution. Remember why the French Revolution is important? It's the end of the 1260 days. This was the uprising before that. There were hundreds of thousands involved in it, and they were murdered, essentially. They were murdered. involving hundreds of thousands of ordinary villagers and small town dwellers before it was forcibly suppressed. It simply was the Reformation in the most widespread, visibly manifest, earnest early form. Secular leaders drew the obvious conclusion: biblical ideas could be dangerously subversive. And as I say, there are quotes available where essentially, you know, there were princes in the smaller districts, especially throughout Germany. Some of them were going in the Catholic direction. Okay, Bavaria stayed Catholic. Some of them were strongly going in the Protestant direction, and there were Luther wasn't the only one with access to a printing press. So the Catholic writers were saying, look at what happens when you start to go away from this system that has worked so well to keep to sort of keep peace in Christianity. This, you know, they said these peasant revolts against you noblemen are the direct result. And of course, Luther wrote one of his more problematical letters for those who really think Luther was a great guy, where he says, you know, to the princes of Germany that this peasants' revolt was unbiblical, and that they should go smite, stab, and kill. And if they died doing that, God would take them. You know, they were doing God's duty in suppressing this peasants' rebellion. And again, that's an accurate quote. I can get you the. That's pretty famous. You'll find it online if you just look. okay, so let's. That's why this is important to me, and that difference between the angel of the waters, which you don't really have any link elsewhere, or the angels plural, that links back into this whole series of issues, only comes out from the Sinaitic. Okay, another kind of interesting thing. Just as a note, the altar chimes in with its own commentary, saying we, yet in the flesh, are yet on the altar. It seems to represent what the church should be saying at this point. Well, let's keep going. We're in verse 8, and our time is fleeting. The fourth angel poured out his bowl upon the sun, and it was given that it should burn men with fire. And men were burned with great burning heat, and blasphemed the name of the Aleph Tau. Ooh, that's different. And authority over these plagues, and they repented not to give him glory. The sun is always a picture of the principles of divine light. If you say it's the gospel, that's nice, but that's not the full picture. It's the principles across all the areas of divine light. And they shone forth with unprecedented light and heat, but the darkness hates the light. Now, what is the goal of the kingdom? It is to bless even the poorest. And if you don't know that, and you do because you are Bible students, but the mankind frequently seems not to know it, you have to look at the parable of the sheep and goats. That's why the link there to Matthew 25:32. But rather than repenting and confessing their sins, this give glory to God, if you go back to Joshua 7:19, you'll see that's the term in Hebrew meaning confess your sins. So they refuse to confess any sins, and they said, okay, we're going to replace that second rule, that second Reich, with a third Reich, a new civilization. Brought on the Second World War and the horrors, a unprecedented destruction and weaponry. It really was in no way having any links back to Christianity. And the Minister of Culture and Hitler had some discussions on it, because Hitler said, you know, if you're at least using Christian ideas, you can link into something that people already know. But no, they were developing these whole hellish series of nighttime meetings and, you know, the Pillars of Lights meetings, where the audience would be surrounded at night by these real intense beams going up into the sky, the Cathedral of Light, they called it, and it always took place in the dark. So Men may be a special reference to this Nazi doctrine of the master race, because what was the purpose? It wasn't just to grab land. Prior to that, there was a philosopher that we know for saying God is dead, Friedrich Nietzsche, who said that really as man, as the ape is a laughing stock to man, so is man to Übermensch, to the Superman, writing in German, Superman. And the Nazis had a program called Lebensborn, literally this fount of life. This was a program to get the best, the healthiest, and the most genetically pure, by Nazi standards, men and women to breed so that they were going to be producing this master race that was going to be served by the lesser races of mankind. And undesirable races, especially the Jews, had no place in this Third Reich, but the death camps, and we're not going to elaborate on that. What happened in terms of the impact on Israel? Well, the Allies were victorious. Even Russia, after trying to go with the Axis powers, was double-crossed and ended up as an ally that really was important for winning the war. You're looking at Stalin, who is one of the greatest sociopaths of the 20th century. But even he was moved to say, these people need their own land. And both Roosevelt was dead. Truman ignored the State Department that says, you know, if you do anything in Israel, there's going to be problems with all the Arabs and the Muslims, you know, the Muslims there. And Truman passed over that. He ignored it. And both he and Stalin, you know, had a solid front for supporting the State of Israel. That's what came out of World War II for the State of Israel. The manuscript here actually preserves Aleph Tau, which was so unhappy that when they really didn't like something, later editors used the knife to scrape it off, but the committee could read the first and the last two letters. That's usually translated Alpha and Omega. But this is what it should be, and that's a whole different topic that we won't get into. Verse 10, the fifth poured out his bowl upon the throne of the beast, and his kingdom became darkened, and they gnawed their tongues for pain and blasphemed God. Well, this fifth plague especially falls on Romanism. What was it? That's the throne of the beast here. So we have this one very directly telling you, you know, who it's going to be affecting, and in a way that says, well, what's the most devastating thing that happened to Romanism? Well, it was the Vatican II Council that they called. They were trying to find some way to make the church modern and relevant because people weren't going back to the way things had been. And in the process of doing that, didn't work. It really destroyed the faith of solid Catholics. Also, if you flip down on that last page again, I believe the Ahaziah, this son of Jezebel and Ahab, dies with, I usually like to think he dies with Stalin's death. And what succeeds it in the place of these failed the failed Third Reich? What we would call liberal democracies, and these have enabled a system that is called in a lot of places globalism. Now, there's a tremendous amount of criticism for globalism because the benefits especially go to the rich and powerful. If you take a look at what happens with the way the money flows, follow the money, as they say, The rich are getting incredibly richer, and lately even richer at, by standards of that time. And the poor are not seeing, for all the economic benefits, most of those only grudgingly go to the poor. The middle class has slowly grown, like 3% if you adjust for inflation, over, let's say, the last 30 years. That I know is a pretty accurate statistic. Whereas what they call the 1% incredible growth of wealth, and the bottom part of society, incredible loss of wealth. So this is one of the things that comes out of this. I believe this is pictured by Ahab and Jezebel's next son, Jehoram, who has a long reign, because this has been the ongoing system since the end of the Second World War, the experiment of the United Nations, which, as we can see, has not been very effective. But I think I do like the thought that has been set forward. The whole purpose of the United Nations was to get Israel born. And after that, everything else has been fairly irrelevant. Let's look at the sixth plague and start in verse 12. The sixth poured out his bowl upon the great river Euphrates, and the waters of it were dried up, that the way might be prepared for the kings from the sunrise. And it was given from the mouth of the dragon, and from the mouth of the beast, and from the mouth of the false prophet, three unclean spirits, if as if frogs. And these are the spirits of demons performing signs, who go forth to the rulers of the whole inhabited earth to gather them into the battle of the great day of the God of Almightiness, which is a little different, weird reading. Behold, he comes as a thief. This is a special instruction to us. Elijah is closing out, but Elijah needs to hear this message. Behold, he comes as a thief. Blessed is the one watching and keeping his garments, so that he may not walk naked and others may see his shame. That's parenthetical thought. I think that's put in there. And gathering them, we're back on the main track, gathering them, these kings of the earth, to a place called in Hebrew Armageddon. Well, I think, brethren, this sixth plague is one that is in fulfillment in our day. What is it? It's the information explosion and the things that come along with the information explosion, which is everybody has their own little pipeline to the truth on the news. You know, when you'd go back to the period, let's say, of post-World War II, as television came in, you had three major national networks in the United States. Now you can go on the internet and get whatever flavor of news tickles your tummy. And of course, it's all totally accurate because it's on the internet. But there, for good and bad, the internet's out there. This explosion of information has made things like the Arab Spring possible. Okay, that's the first time there was a people's revolution that self-organized and stayed, was able to affect things by just communicating using cell phones from all over. And shutting down the internet doesn't work because the government needs the internet as well to keep things flowing. So it's been interesting. But you know, in some ways, this has an interesting tie-in with the Reformation, because what was the difference? Luther thought he was going to be martyred like Jan Hus of Bohemia 100 years earlier, but he wasn't. What made the difference? The printing press. The printing press made it possible for translation, both the Latin and German, of the 95 Theses to be put out in the hands of the people, and tracts were put in the hands of the people, often with pictures for those who couldn't read, that were pretty unnecessary. They were really, really not nice pictures, along with the printed material. And I think that's been the part of the sixth plague. It's interesting when you see Almighty. The Greek for that's pantokrator. A krator is rule. Okay, so we are a representative demos. Demos is the people, krator. We are a democracy. Okay, anytime you hear krasi, it comes from the same word. Pantos is all. So pantokrator is as literally almighty, and I'm sticking with Saint Jerome here, but when you take a look at how that word is used in what is the Old Testament translation of the Greek, the Septuagint, it is the translation for Shavuot. Shavuot is Lord of the armies, the Lord of hosts. So anytime you see that word almighty, link it back to that Strong's number, and I have that in the footnotes on the text, but that's real. And then there's a little thing added on to the end here that says that, that is giving you the sense of the military aspect of this with glory. And so that's why it's God of Almightiness. So we're up to 17, and when he poured out his bowl upon the air, that's the spirits. We talked about how they are creating havoc in every way they can because they know their time is short. We talked about that last week. There came a great voice from the temple of God saying, "It is done." And there came thunder and lightning and voices and thunder and an earthquake so great, such as never had been since men were upon the earth, so great a degree. And the great city became three parts, and the city of the nations fell. Well, that's different. Your text will generally read cities, plural, of the nations. That's not what the Sinaitic reads. It's talking about, I believe, this fourth Reich that is going to be emerging, that we see emerging before our very eyes. And the great city became three parts, and the cities of the nations fell, and Babylon the Great was remembered before God on account to give her a cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath, and every island fled, nor were mountains found. And great hail of a talent's weight came down from heaven upon men. Oh yeah, they're still running things. Did they give glory to God? They still don't get it, until everything's destroyed. And they blasphemed God because of the plague of the hail, because the plague was exceedingly great. Well, that's what prepares man for the kingdom. That brings it down. And I want to pop up the Greek here for a minute, because I think there's something that is interesting to note in your the text. Now, this is just a little note on pantokratoros, the almightiness, and why I think that's deliberate. Now, here we go. So there's a great voice from the temple of God saying, "It is finished." That is not the word Jesus uses when he says it is finished on the cross, even though it's translated the same way. It has become. That's from the Greek verb genomai, to use the middle voice. And what might not be apparent, because you can't translate it the same way, so there are going to be six uses of this verb, all translated different ways, and there's no good way to, you can show it at the interlinear, but there's no good way to do it in one anything that makes sense in English. So this is genomai, and then eganoto, became, they became, is from that same verb. And then egeneto, it became, is from that same verb. And then igenonto, they became, is from this verb. And again, the same verb. And then down here, the last use of that, that's six uses. And if you go through with an interlinear, and I make a note here saying, hey, take a look at those verses, brethren, you know, from this Greek, that's Strong's number 1096. Anytime, when you see the plagues, almost always it says, this was the bowl poured out, and it uses exactly this verb form. This is what happened. There's only two plagues that have a little variation on that. And here, when the seventh is poured out, there's not just one thing that happens. There's these six things that happen along with the hail. So I'm happy that, you know, we could share some of this. Again, we'd like to present this in the spirit that we see through a glass darkly. But what, you know, I always think about what gives brethren problems. Why are they confused about things? And I think some brethren are waiting to see the Anglican Church and the Roman Catholic and the Pope in Rome come together with evangelical leaders. And, you know, anytime there's a little hug and kiss session, you know, that gets spread all over. I don't think that's the way it's working out. We keep looking for, that's what I would call a top-down view, that this effort to organize and save civilization is going to come from the top down. That's in fact coming from the bottom up. You have Vladimir Putin, who, you know, is now truly trying to be a son of the Russian Orthodox Church, snuggling up to the evangelicals. Yeah, snuggling up to the evangelicals, along with Catholic Viktor Orban of Hungary, who is supporting him. You have, you know, Bolsonaro in Brazil, you know, another one of this ilk, who's nominally Catholic. They're organizing to save civilization, but you know, Putin is saying Russian Orthodoxy is the only thing that really stands for the gospel. Look at the confusion in the Roman Catholic Church. Look at the directions they're going. We're standing for Christian principles. And when he says that, he's actually correct. These changes that are being permitted to try to make the church accommodate everybody, the Roman Catholic Church accommodate everybody, aren't working. Brethren have always been looking from the top down. It's coming from the bottom up, brethren. That's where we have to look. So I just wanted to, we're at the end of our time, and it's been a blessing to share this with you. And I hope you see why I find the Sinaitic work exciting. And again, that's online. And if you have any questions, I'll be here after the prayer.